It's time to break the silence and open up the dialogue around the topics of miscarriage and baby loss.
No more shame, no more taboo. Let's ditch it for the sake of our children.
The ones who are, the ones who will come.
And in memory of the ones who never came to be.
This is the Worst Girl Gang Ever podcast.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Worst Girl Gang Ever. Today we're joined by Ebony. Ebony, whereabouts are you?
I'm in Colchester, Essex.
That's so funny.
What's that?
Not funny, but the lady, the bereavement midwife who we've just been on a call with, is based at Colchester Hospital.
Not funny. Well, yeah. Strange. Small world.
Small world. Small world.
Blimey.
So, Ebony, let's start at the very beginning.
Yes.
A very good place to
start. Well, you know what? I'm in a pantomime at the moment and I'm the fairy godmother and that is literally one of my lines.
Really?
I'd like to start at the very beginning. I'm told a very good place to start. Cinderella lost her beloved father, which broke the poor girl's heart.
Oh, do you have to sing? Anywho. Let's get down to business.
That's one of my lines.
Did you write the play?
No, I promise it's one of my lines. It says, anyway, let's get down to business. We haven't much time. It's the transformation scene. It makes it a breeze to remember.
Yeah. Do you have any passionate rants in there?
No, no passionate rants.
That's a shame. You can do
that. Baby loss either. No,
it's sorry, Ebony. My life. Start from the very beginning. Tell us how you became a member of this glorious but shitty gang.
Yeah, so November 2019, we decided to start trying, and the week we decided to start trying, I actually got a letter to say that I had high precancerous cells come back on my smear test.
Oh, okay.
So that was like a whirlwind, not expected. And I thought, okay, let's be sensible, let's get this sorted, and then we'll try again. So moving to February, started trying, got pregnant first month. Brilliant. Wow, amazing. Went for an early scan just because. Didn't assume at all that anything would be wrong, and it wasn't in that one. We went for another early scan 2 weeks later. No feeling that there would be anything wrong, but we just wanted another scan. And we got told that we'd had a miscarriage. And I was like, I've never even heard of a miscarriage before. I was like, I still feel really sick. I've had no bleeding. It was just when lockdown started as well. So we got referred to the hospital. They basically told me at the time just to kind of sit and wait it out. So I had no idea. So I just assumed that's what you do. And then it got to a point I thought, mentally, I can't just sit and wait this out. It feels so wrong. So I went back and had medical management, which unfortunately for me didn't work and was just horrendous, to be honest. I then went back and had a DNC, which they really didn't want, but I'm guessing because of COVID, they were trying to keep people out of hospitals. This was all whilst having to go in and be on my own. Mm-hmm. So we went through that, and then I decided to do as much research as I could because I was determined not to have another loss, which I know it's quite common, but I just thought I can't go through that again. And we saw an acupuncturist. We improved our diet, which wasn't horrendous anyway, but we did everything possible. I listened to every podcast going. We had another loss the first month of trying again. And that was exactly the same. We went for a scan and got told that there was no heartbeat. And then at that point, I decided to do even more research. And I saw Alison Hall, nutritionist.
Oh, Alison, the mermaid.
Amazing. Yeah, really good. And actually, not just what she was informing us, but just mentally really supportive as well. And we did some more testing and Joe got tested. And I thought, brilliant, we've crossed everything off here. I had issues with my thyroid, iron, and I thought, okay, definitely that's it. At that point, something in me, my mum lost five babies, and I thought to myself, I wonder if I'm going down the same route. Obviously, 20, 30 years ago, they didn't do testing, so she doesn't know why. So I decided that I wanted to go to CRP clinic, which everyone was saying to me, you know, you're getting pregnant really quickly. That's really good. You've only had two losses. And I just thought, no, I just want to pour everything into this. I don't want this to go on years and years.
Yeah. So CRP clinic is Professor Shihata's clinic.
Yes. Yeah. So we went to see him and he was really positive. He was like, you're probably one of the youngest that has come here. You've only had two losses so far. Most people are three plus. And he was really positive that we would get to the bottom of what was wrong. And after researching what he does, I was convinced that's what the issue was. So we had some testing. I had to have two hysteroscopies. Because I had scarring from my D&Cs. I had to have two of those and pay privately.
Blimey.
That was a sarcastic thumbs up, by the way, for those who wondered what the pause was.
Yeah, so I had that and then we decided to, everything looked okay. I went on the immune protocol for natural killer cells and we started.
Ebony, were your natural killer cells high? Was that one of the, right?
Yeah really high.
Was anything else flagged up or was it just the NK cells?
Just that. So we thought, okay, well, this immune protocol should work. Started to try again, bearing in mind that the last two times we got pregnant the first month of trying, we kind of thought that would happen quite quickly. So 6 months on, nothing had happened. We decided to try superovulation.
Superovulation, for people who don't know what that is, you take some drugs, the prescribed drugs, not just any random ones, and basically
clarifying that one, Laura.
It gets your ovaries ready and develops, gets the most amount of eggs possible ready to be let loose, and then you take a trigger shot which releases the eggs and they tell you what days to shag. Literally they prescribe your shags.
Making love sessions.
Yes. There's a lot of pressure, as if there wasn't already enough pressure.
Yeah. So we had, so they basically told us that 3 to 6 months is usually the most successful. Obviously, this is very expensive. It's time consuming. And like you say, it's very scheduled. Joe, with his work, is sometimes away or working late. So it was quite mentally straining as well. But in my head, I thought, well, if it doesn't work the first month, we've kind of got some time. So anyway, we just had no success. Every month, I either was overstimulated, so I couldn't trigger because of the risk of triplets. I either didn't ovulate. I ovulated before or after, so it just wasn't working for us. So we said we'll do 6 months. And on the sixth month, they said, you haven't ovulated. So I was like, I was just in absolute bits. I was in the office in tears. They are incredible there. The nurses were all in cuddling and saying it will happen. And for us, we've just like spent everything we've got. Every moment of the day, I was researching. During COVID, I wasn't going out because I was like, I don't want to get COVID because that's another thing against me. And yeah, it just took over for 3 years, basically. But so that month we went home, we said, let's just have a break for a month. Let's just eat what we want, drink what we want. Anyway, when my period was due, I was always a little bit early or late. So I just thought, well, I'm going to test because it's just built in me to test. And it came up positive. And I literally had a panic attack. I ran into Joe and I was like, I'm not prepared. We haven't been taking the medication. We've been eating what we want, drinking what we want. This is all going to go wrong. And he was like, look, we've been here before. Let's just prepare for the worst and we'll go in and see. So I called the clinic and they was like, you can't. I said, I am. It's positive. And they said, send a picture of your test. So I sent a picture and they said, you need to come in tomorrow because you need to have an intralipid. So yeah, I went in, but for until my first scan, I was just bleeding, and I just thought we're going down the same route again. And I felt like we had done everything possible. So where was there to go from here? So we went to my first scan, and like I was an absolute mess in the car. It was about a 2-hour journey for us. And they said to us, there's good and bad news. And I was like, right, we'll have the good news first. They said, there's a heartbeat. So I was just like, well, I just don't know how that's possible. I've been bleeding so much. And they said, the bad news is there's a twin who hasn't got a heartbeat. And I was just like, it's just so hard to process. This is amazing. But we've been here before. To me, a good scan means nothing.
Yeah.
And obviously, we have lost another baby. So that, obviously, you go every 2 weeks for your scans. And during that time, I was bleeding a lot. And one nurse in particular there was incredible. She was calling me every other day. And she was like, you know, just keep positive. And every scan...
Her name.
She's left.
Oh, that's a shame. Jerry was my favourite.
Jerry's incredible. Yeah, she's brilliant. So good, yeah. But yeah, so we went back every scan, and every scan was good news, but we were still like driving home, like, let's not get too high. Could all come crashing down again. We've been here before. You go to that clinic, you see so many women, and you think they've been here before. And for us, fortunately, I've got a nearly 5-month-old. So it did end well. But that last month we went for super ovulation, they actually called me and said, this is not working. You need to move to IVF. And I was like, I can't afford IVF. I've spent every penny I've got. How can we afford IVF? And then we kind of just said, look, if we've got a remortgage, we'll do it. We've come this far. We've just got to keep going. And I've just done so much research. And that's why I was so passionate about coming on here. Because to me, to advocate for yourself, to do the research, to listen to what you can listen, is just so important. Because I did also go down the NHS route at the same time. And they said that there was nothing wrong. And I knew there was, because I'd been having testing. So it is heartbreaking that you can hear that, and I could have just said, okay, I'll just keep trying then. And I'm sure we never would have got where we are now without that.
Mm. I can completely 100% relate to you, because this is why like we're here, really, because I was just so astounded by the amount of times I was fobbed off with the NHS. And I remember thinking, what if someone out there is going through what I'm going through and doesn't know where to go, or what research to do, or what questions to ask? Yeah. They're just going to keep trying, keep having more losses, probably give up and not have a child, and it, you know, lead them into depression and despair and grief. And that's not fair. Everyone should know what's out there and should be able to have the confidence to fight for themselves.
Yeah. It's essentially why we've started, we've partnered with, well, not partnered in a, you know, business sense, but we've started talking about Plan Your Baby, because they are so nurturing, aren't they? Because they take you, and I think, for so many people, it's either fall pregnant naturally or have IVF. They're the only two options you think about. And actually, you have to do the groundwork yourself to link those two up with all the other things that could happen. And it is difficult when you go to a doctor who's got like years and years and years and years and years of experience behind them, and a gynecologist. You trust what they say, don't you? So you don't, like, I definitely wouldn't have looked outside of what I was being told by a fully trained gynecologist. I would just go, oh, okay, IVF's my option.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there was a point during that time that I thought, shall we just move to IVF? But actually, IVF wouldn't have solved our issue, because there was an underlying issue that needed support. So I remember, like, the amount of research I'd done, and I just felt so lonely because people would say to me, you'll get there one day. And to me, I was like, I can't see that. And I can't keep living like this every month. I need to do something about it. And I need to feel like we're getting that little bit closer. And Joe, I mean, he's so positive in everyday life anyway, but every month I'd come back and be like, oh, I can't believe it's another negative. And he'd be like, it's okay, next month it'll be a positive. But when you are living that, like he used to come home from work and I used to literally be sitting in the dark in tears. And he'd say to me, what's wrong? And I'd just be like, I'm just so desperate. And then we would sit together and read more information. And I'd be like, okay, fine, I need to take that supplement. And I know that maybe all of that didn't make a difference at all. But I really think that if you feel like you're doing everything, it does mentally help.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than just doing nothing. Like coming away from an appointment with no plan except just keep going. Well, it didn't work last time. It's unlikely to work this time. Yeah. People used to say to me all the time, why don't you just do IVF?
Yeah.
Like, what, do IVF to get pregnant, which I can clearly do very well. And then what? Spend all that money. And then I just feel so sorry for people who go for IVF not having had other testing done. Because IVF just gets you pregnant, doesn't it? That, well, so, on a good round.
Yeah, but also to say to just do IVF, it's a lot more than just doing IVF. Like, it's not an easy way out. And but like,
there's no education around it, though. There's no education around fertility, around loss, around, you know, what happens if you don't get pregnant naturally. You know, where do you go? What do you do? There's a huge, huge gap in that relevant, helpful, resource-based information, because it isn't just fall pregnant naturally or have IVF. And as you've both said, like you've got really similar experiences in terms of immunology and recurrent miscarriage and stuff. And there are, you guys know how much there is out there that can help you if your problem is not in the getting pregnant. But generally speaking, people don't know that. And that's why it's so important to have the have the resources available to do that research, but not have to do what you did, Ebony, and what you did, Laura, and really fight to search for them and fight to be heard and fight to be understood. And, you know, this stuff should be easily accessible for everyone who needs it.
Yeah, I agree. It's really tough, and it's really, it's exhausting.
Yeah, and mentally, completely emotionally and mentally draining, and so detrimental to your overall well-being. And if this stuff was easily accessible, you would arrive at your destination of having a baby or being pregnant or deciding to end your fertility. You'd arrive there in such a better state than you do when you have to fight for yourself constantly, or you're pushed from pillar to post, or you're ignored, or you're dismissed, or you're laughed at, like Laura was at one point. You know, it wears away at you, and it breaks your soul to the point where once you're there, you have all these other issues as well as not being able to get pregnant or not being able to carry a baby. And I just think that's such a shame. Like, if we can minimize that level, if we can minimize the emotional, mental health aspect of this whole process, then women will have more resilience to keep going when they need to.
There she is with a passionate rant. I knew we'd get one.
The day that I had my daughter, when I went in, I said, can I listen to the heartbeat? And they was like, yeah, why's that? I said, I've just got a feeling there's something wrong. And like every point in my pregnancy, I just felt like I couldn't celebrate because it's possible there could be something wrong. And it is crazy. Like, once you've had one loss and actually know what comes with that, like when people tell me they're pregnant, I'm like, oh, that's really good. But back of my head, I think they could lose that. Because it just makes you open your eyes to all that's involved. And it is, well, it's a miracle, isn't it, really?
It is a miracle. And I think it's that what you just talked about is exacerbated by, because I had a miscarriage as well. And I think it's Laura did too, but having a miscarriage adds that whole, another level of anxiety to a scan.
Definitely.
You know that because your baby has died inside you without you knowing before. So therefore it could happen again. So therefore, you know, a scan is not just, before I'd experienced loss, a scan was like only going to be a happy event. It was just to check on your baby. It was just to have a little look at what was going on in there. And then, yeah, just get the picture and prepare the social media post, right?
Exactly. Ours was, I went to, we wanted to get a scan for Father's Day and I'd already ordered the card and everything.
Yeah.
And then I just could not believe. And you just don't hear of miscarriages, do you? Like, you know about miscarriages, but you don't assume that, how can you lose a baby without actually feeling like you've lost a baby? And actually, I think it was about 7 weeks in the end, I waited for that first D&C and I just felt disgusted. I was just like, I just need this to end. I can't, there is a dead baby inside me. There's no sugarcoating that. Mm. And the fact that I was expected to wait that long, but actually after having my first one, that second one, I went in, I said, I do not want medical management. I want a D&C. And that they was like, well, really? I said, no, I just want a D&C. I need this over with. And actually it maybe wasn't the best route because I ended up needing extra surgery, but at the time for me that was the best. And I think that's another thing as well, you sometimes feel like you're not listened to, but actually they should realize you're the one that is feeling the sadness and knows what is best for your body.
So the warriorship, we wanted to come and tell you a little bit about it, didn't we, Bex?
And in case you're already going, why? We don't want to know about a fucking ship. The Warriorship is our online membership for warriors in this community.
It's packed full of stuff. So we just want to tell you about some of the stuff. All of the content from all of the courses that we ever run is in the Warriorship. So there's loads to get your teeth into.
And we are also developing modules for what happens after.
But not only that, we've also got a ton of educational workshops running once a month. In the coming months, we have got body positivity workshop, gratitude workshop, and loads more.
And on top of that, we also have a resident mental health specialist. And on top of that, as if that wasn't enough, there's 13 events every month. And there's stuff popping up all the time as well that other people are organising that you can be a part of. So it really is thriving.
And all you have to do is head to the link in our bio or visit our website and you can be a part of this too.
We love to see you there.
It's so difficult to know what, like in that moment, like what is best as well. Because I can remember having the same, like mine was in May 2020. So it was during the pandemic, like that initial, like, fuck, no one knows what they're doing pandemic stage. And my medical management didn't work either. But because I'd already had children, I remember them saying to me, well, how long was your last labor? And it was really quick. And they were like, oh yeah, medical management will be your quickest option. And I was like, I just want to, oh, you know, I had kids at home. I didn't have any childcare because it was COVID. Like, I couldn't see my husband because of COVID. I couldn't have him there. You know, I mean, you know all this. But I was then in there I was in hospital for 5 days because the medical management didn't work. And they were like, you're just going to have to go home. And I was like, right. So I went home. And then a day or so later, it was, you know, it started naturally, but it was like way more than anything I could deal with by myself. So I had to go back. And then there was complications. And then I had to have a D&C. And then I got home. And then the pregnancy test was positive. And then I had to go back. And it was just like this like weeks of having physical problems that then completely prevented me from being able to deal with things on an emotional level. And in the COVID shit as well, it fucks you up so much. Yeah. Because you don't
know. Not just a heavy period, guys.
Not just a heavy period. And all the time, like, I was told, oh, medical management, yeah, that will work for you. And it didn't work. And then, oh, you'll get a negative pregnancy test because we've done a D&C. So you get a negative pregnancy test, you know, we got it all. And then I had a positive pregnancy test. And you're like, fuck, this wasn't supposed to happen. Like, none of this fucking shit was supposed to happen. What's wrong with my body? Why are all these people who have fucking 7 years worth of medical training and however much experience, why are they all telling me stuff that doesn't fucking happen?
Yeah.
You lose faith. You lose faith in your body, yourself, the world, the medical profession. And you're just like, fucking hell, I don't know. I don't know anything about my life. I don't know. What is being a woman anyway? Fuck this shit.
Passionate rant number two.
But it just, I just hate the fact that for so many women, they are not told the whole story. They're not told this might not actually happen. This might not actually work. And therefore, it fucks them up in the head more. And they end up with more baggage. There's the ramifications and ripples of this one experience are so much far-reaching and stronger and more painful than anyone gives them credit for. And it gets my goat.
As well, you're just left to, after you've had that, you're just left to then get on with life.
And yeah.
I'm probably the one in a million that actually liked the fact that we had lockdown, because I could just hide away from the world.
Yeah.
And even like at work, I work from home. I never put my face on when we had a Zoom. And actually, I was really depressed, but it was easy to hide I was depressed because I never had to do anything. And then actually, when we come out of the whole lockdown, I was like, well, I can't get COVID, because if I get COVID and I'm pregnant, then I'm going to lose another baby. So like, we was extreme to the point that I was wearing like 2 masks when no one was wearing a mask, because I was just so determined for nothing else to go wrong, even though I wasn't pregnant. Like, it just completely threw everything I thought. I think that even like when you do go to the hospital, and like you say, you get given a bit of paper, this will happen, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah, and then it just gives you more, it completely backs up your fears that there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Like, my body can't even process a loss properly.
Yeah.
What the hell's wrong with me? What, you know, and then when I'm sure you found through your subsequent pregnancy, like, you're just constantly like, well, yeah, okay, I'm pregnant today, but, you know,
it could go wrong.
My body did that before and didn't recognize it before. And every scan you have is reassuring until the next day. And then you're like, well, anything could have happened now.
Yeah. And we had like a really in-depth scan that shows everything possible. And even then, that just didn't reassure me.
So, Ebony, can I ask about the twin?
Yeah.
So what happened? Did your body reabsorb it? How early was
So our first scan at 6 weeks, there was no heartbeat, but you could see the twin. And it was identical. And they did say, because this was another thing, they said, hopefully there'll be no impact on the one with the heartbeat. And then I'm like, what? How is that possible? But luckily, I guess, for us, there was no impact and it does just reabsorb. But even now, like I said to Joe yesterday, I had Hallie in the back of the car asleep, and I sometimes look in the other mirror and think there could be another one there. And I'm really, really grateful we have her. Like, it is even the clinic, like, we don't know how you got pregnant that month. You didn't ovulate. And I was like, well, I must have done. But even now I look back and I think it's quite hard to process, because although I was really happy that I had a positive test, I still lost another baby. And it's identical to her. So
is that, you know, what the baby would have looked like?
Yeah.
But do you think you'll share, will you tell Hallie about her sister?
Yeah, I think so. I think I will. I think it's really important. So like, my mum was obviously really honest with me about losing 5 babies. She lost them quite late on. And then was obviously really...
Did she tell you before that you lost?
Yeah. Yeah. So she was obviously really supportive, because she's been through what I've been through. And when I was doing the research, she was like, I think you're amazing for knowing all of this. And I was like, well, I guess it wasn't available when you just assumed that's it and you've lost babies. But then she had 2 really healthy. So who knows what the issue was there. But I think it's really important. I will never not tell people what we've been through, because I think it's so important. And actually, a random man the other day at work come up to me and said, oh, I've heard about what you've been through. We've been through that. And I was like, all right, we've not even said hello to each other before and we're talking. But I just think it's so important. And Joe was going to work, like, didn't have a break off work, and he was just going in and just pretending everything was fine. And I said, you need to share what's happened, because it's not fine. It's okay to not be okay as well. So he did the same. He ended up telling people, partly because he'd be talking to people and be standing back because he didn't want to get COVID. But again, I think there's nothing to not, why would you not tell people? I think it's so important. And the whole 12 week thing, people recently that I know have got pregnant and said they didn't want to share until 12 weeks. I do get it, but I also think if something went wrong, you would share it. So why not share it from the start?
Mm. Yeah, it's a tough call, isn't it, the 12-week one? I think it's obviously, along with everything else, it's down to the individual to decide what they feel comfortable with. But I found it really hard to tell people and then immediately have to untell them. You know, like, oh yeah, I really need help with my children, and I need you to break the rules of COVID because I am in hospital because I was pregnant, but now I'm not pregnant. No, it just felt like another added, like, head fuck.
Also, people say to me, is this your first child?
Yeah, yeah, that's tough, isn't it?
And I'm like, well, it's my first child that's made it this far.
Yeah.
It's not my first child. I've been pregnant before, but obviously she's the first that I brought home, so...
When I was pregnant, people used to say to me, so is this your first? And I used to say, hopefully it will be. But, you know, I've lost 7 before this. So, you know, we'll see.
Yes, that's hard. That's really horrible. Because, you know, we've spoken to women as well who have lost babies and then gone on to have a successful pregnancy. And then people in social situations say things like, oh, have you just, is this your only one? Or, you know, and they don't, because it's in a cafe or whatever, they then say, oh yeah, this is my only child, or whatever they say. Yeah, I've just got two, or whatever it is. And then they feel horribly guilty because they feel like they've denied the existence of their baby that they lost.
Yeah.
But then even that is like, social situations do make a difference in what we decide to divulge about our personal lives, right? So it's any given day. Like, if maybe if you're in a quieter place, or it was a children's playgroup or something where you had a bit more time to chat, then maybe you could divulge that information. Maybe you'd feel comfortable. But I just think that I feel so sorry for women who then feel the guilt of not divulging that, and they carry that with them, because I just think all situations are different, and what is right for you in that moment is right for you, full stop. And it's not the denial of what's happened before. It's just the ability and the need to exist in that moment and at that time peacefully. And that's fine. That's good. Go on,
Ebony. Right. I wanted to ask you, if you don't mind me asking you, about any future baby plans.
That's what my last question was.
Well, this is the thing. At the time, after all we've been through, and financially as well, I felt like I couldn't put us through this again. And I don't think it's fair on Hallie, because of financially, mentally, the time. So I was like, I'm okay with just having one. And now I've had her, I'm like, I really want to bring her a brother or sister. But also it's that, potentially going through the same thing again, and can we do that? So it's quite difficult, because obviously, like, it doesn't necessarily mean we'd have the same issue, but it's a lot. It's not just, well, we might just have a miscarriage. It's not just that, especially because I do have missed miscarriages. So there's the surgical side of it as well, because even that, I'd never had surgery before. So I was just like, I'm being put to sleep. Like, it's not just surgery, is it? But I'm going to say we hope, but if we don't, we're really lucky, because there are people that aren't as lucky as what we've been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really thought that we'd cracked it when I had my eldest. I thought, well, that's it. We know the answer. I know what drugs to take, and it will be easy next time. And it wasn't. And you say, like, financially, we've absolutely scuppered ourselves this time. So, you know, my youngest cost us an awful lot of money. And now we're like, you know, you said, you know, financially, is it fair on Hallie? That's how I feel about Bertie. I feel like, oh no, we can't go on holiday, because you've got a little brother, and we've got to pay back the money that we've spent to get him. It's really hard, but I had come to terms with just having one. And my husband said, come on, one more time, let's try it. And it worked, which is, you know, amazing. But now I'm like, no, that's definitely it. That's definitely it. We actually can't afford to do it again. So it makes me really envious of people who just have sex and get pregnant. Because I would get another one if I could, you know.
That's the thing as well. Like, we were spending money like water. Like, it just become a bit of a, oh, can I have £1,000, please? Yeah, yeah, okay. And you just think, like, we don't actually have this to be spending, but you just have to keep going. And, like, we got engaged, and then people are like, when are you getting married? And I'm like, we've actually spent all our money. But it is just so hard because every month I was sacrificing certain things to pay for medication. But if you don't do that, you're never going to get to this end. So, we say hopefully, but at the same time, I want to be able to live a little as well, because we spent 3 years of our life not being able to do certain things because of it. So I think it's quite difficult to have to do that again.
You want it, like, Hallie's only, 5 months old. You want to enjoy that without the added pressure of the TTC and the appointments and the
strain as well. Like, thinking you've got to take all those drugs and going to appointments. It's really nice to not have that on your head. But at the same time, I do think deep down I did want to. I'm okay with having one, but it's another added thing, isn't it? You're still sad because you've not got what you wanted and what other people, like you say, get so easily. People fall pregnant like that, and that's it.
Okay. We started trying for a second when Bertie was 5 months old, that we went back to see Shihata. I took him with me and we started taking the meds at 5 months. And although the dream was to have them close together, and ideally to not go through any more losses, I'm happy with how it panned out, because I feel like we made the most of Bertie, and we really have a really good relationship with him, and have had so much fun with him. And I feel like if we'd have had another one straight away, maybe that bond wouldn't be as good. And I don't like everything happens for a reason, because it doesn't. Stuff happens all the time. But sometimes that's what I have to tell myself, that it worked out that way because that was how it was meant to be. And
I think there are positives in every kind of, you know, in that what you're talking about, obviously, scenario. And there are, you know, if you'd had babies close together, then perhaps they would be good friends from an earlier age. You know, lots of children who have a big age gap are great friends when they get older, but not so much when they're little. But as you say, you know, there are positives for every different family situation, aren't there?
Yeah, I think just because things don't work out as you planned, it doesn't mean that they won't work out.
Yeah.
You know, whether that mean you have the number of babies that you've always dreamed of, have less, have big age gaps, or have no children at all, it will work out. Life will still be good.
Yeah, you just work with it, don't you?
Yeah, definitely.
I know it feels like that, you know, that's easy to say because you've got two kids, but I think there is a happy ending for everyone, or whatever it may be.
And will Jessica Hepburn's podcast episode come out yet when this one comes out? Which one's first?
No, it's coming up.
Oh, okay. So if you're listening to that and you think that's easy for you to say, Laura, you've got kids, listen to our podcast with Jessica Hepburn in a few weeks. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman. She's childless, not by choice. And she talks about how to gain fulfillment from life when...
She's living the dream.
Pardon?
She's living the dream.
She's living the dream. She's so happy. She's so fulfilled. She hasn't been able to have children. And she was just a really inspirational person to talk to. So it's well worth a listen when that one comes out.
Well, Ebony, thank you so, so much. It's been really lovely chatting to you.
Thanks for having me. It's been really lovely.
Yeah, it's been amazing.
Because I remember, like, especially during COVID, I used to go for long walks and listen to a podcast each day. And it just does really make you feel like you're not on your own.
Oh, good. Well, we're so pleased that you found us when you did. And thank you for sharing your story. I'm sure it's going to help a lot of people. And fucking brilliant. Good work on your resilience and your ability to be able to carry on. I really admire you for that. I think you're incredible. Yeah, and keep in touch as well. Let us know how you're getting on.
Take care, both of you.
All right, take care, Bethany.
Thanks, guys. Bye.